Welcome to ACC Nation. I'm Jim Quist, that's Will Ogenen, and we're talking ACC sports. And we've got a lot of sports to talk about. Virginia wins the 2021 NCAA Women's Swimming and Diving Championship. That's one. Congratulations to them. North Carolina's Austin O'Connor, a two seed in the NCAA Wrestling Championship, won the 149-pound championship, taking out the number one seed. Three other ACC wrestlers picked up silver. 43 ACC fencers selected to participate in the NCAA championships. That's coming up. D1 baseball top 25, number 7, Louisville, number 11, Georgia Tech, number 14, Notre Dame, number 15, Pitt, number 17, FSU, number 19, Miami, number 24, UNC. Again, Will, with this Northern school thing, it's interesting.
Oh, don't you know? We like to play the baseball up here.
Yeah, you got that down pat, man.
Yeah, well, I've been here long enough. And when you're married to someone who has that voice down pat, you get a little practice from her.
Well, she didn't speak like that normally, though, does she?
I mean, she knows how to perfect the accent. Yeah, okay. Because, you know, she's heard
she's
it.
She's been around it forever. Okay.
Yeah, I've been around it for 30-something years, so.
All right. NFCA softball, top 25. Four schools from the ACC in that poll, which is kind of unusual. In the past, it's always been all about Florida State. Florida State tops it all at 13. Duke is right behind him at 14. Virginia Tech, 18. Clemson, with a brand new program for the most part, comes in at number 23, doing something right there. What else we got? We got the CRCA rowing poll, the top 20. Virginia is at number 3, Duke at 10, and Syracuse at 17. When it comes down to lacrosse, you can't ask much more than this. Men's and women's lacrosse polls, UNC is number one in both, dominating. So let's go down the men. After UNC, it's number 2, Duke, number 4, Syracuse, number 6, Notre Dame, and number 9, Virginia. Over on the women's side, after North Carolina, at number 2 is Syracuse, number 4, Boston College, number 5, Notre Dame, number 8, Virginia, number 9, Duke, number 16, Louisville, tied for 25, Virginia Tech, who typically is not in that poll and has been building one heck of a program. So there.
So what you're saying is, like, the ACC in lacrosse is like the SEC in football.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. They pretty much dominate that. They've had some ups and downs. And, Denver, who had a really nice run for a while as a top dog there, is tied with Virginia Tech at 25 on the women's side. So, AVCA volleyball, 14, Louisville, 19, Pitt, 22, Georgia Tech, 23, Notre Dame, 25, FSU. And over in beach volleyball, yes, it is that time of year again. Tied for number 1 is Florida State. Awesome. We'll have some more stuff in regard to some of the sports that you typically don't hear about, gymnastics being one of them, and ice hockey. We'll have more of that on the website at accnation.net. That's coming up this week. We'll have a lot of stuff. We just are, quite frankly, are swamped with basketball. And so that's what we're
going to
talk about.
We are in tournament season. I know the NCAA hockey selection show was on Sunday, I know Boston College is in, so that's something to keep an eye out.
That's right. And I believe Notre Dame is too, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm.
I think so. I don't have it in front of me, but I think they might.
That's unfortunately, that's one I just did not get around to. NIT basketball, number 3 seed, NC State, over number 2, Davidson, 75-61. That's not a surprise. Not really. I mean, I was kind of surprised that NC State got a 3 seed compared to Davidson at 2. But what can I say? Now, the Wolfpack get to meet with number 1 seed Colorado. Colorado State. Sorry about that. It's going to be Thursday at 7 p.m. That's the NIT. That should be fun.
Like I said, more games for NC State and that up and coming team, you know, to all the freshmen, sophomores that have done good things for this team this year. And like I said, I'm going to continue to harp on them as my sleeper team for next season.
So see how they perform against Colorado State. Now let's take a look at how the women are performing in the NCAA tournament. We've got a lot of action going on here. Number 8 seed Syracuse over number 9 South Dakota State, 72-55. Number 8 Oklahoma State over Wake Forest. This is pretty much a runaway. Number 9 Wake Forest, 84-61. Coming up, we've got some of the following games. Number 2 Louisville will be taking on number 15. Who do I have here? Marist, 15 Marist. Okay. Some of the other scores, number 7, Virginia Tech over Marquette, who was ranked or seeded 10th, 70-63. Number 8, Oregon State, with an 83-59 win over number 9 seed Florida State. Number 5, Georgia Tech, with a very close win over number 12 seed SFA, 54-52. A lot of exciting basketball in both tournaments. Number 7, Alabama, pretty much rolled over number 10, North Carolina, 80-71. And number 1 seed, NC State, with a fairly easy win there over number 16, NC A&T, 79-58.
Yeah, so I actually watched a little bit of that Georgia Tech Stephen F. Austin game, and like you said, it was a really good game right down to the end. I think both teams had a shot to win right at the end of regulation, but neither team could hit. And say Georgia Tech just did a little more in overtime to get that win, and it was a nice win too, because you know we know 5-12 upsets are pretty popular in March, but they were able to avoid that one. And watch a little bit of North Carolina State playing at A&T. And I know A&T actually got hot to start the game, but after they cooled down, it was pretty much all NC State. And we know we've known this team to be really, really good. And, you know, sometimes you don't always bring your best, but you're able to overcome it. I think this is a good teaching moment for this team.
Boom. The tour puts up the shot, rattles out, and it's ball game. Georgia Tech coming off the ACC tournament title, championship win against Florida State. And Alvarado hits the turnaround jumper.
Long zigzag move, contact, he finishes.
Baker makes the pass. Harper gets bumped by Sims, and then the ball bounces right back to Baker. Nope.
2-1. It's his night.
No.
Compromita hammers one home and a foul.
Into the hands of Clark. Kihei Clark. Virginia needs something in a hurry. Murphy takes the three and drills it. 7 seconds.
I tell you, Will, it's very interesting from a history perspective. The first four. This absolutely blows my mind. UCLA, Michigan State. First four game.
Two of the biggest, like most historic programs, at least, you know, in the history of the NCAA. Obviously, they used to having all that success, especially in like the 70s with John Wooden, and then, you know, falling down a little bit, but coming back a little bit with Mick Cronin.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're on a roll so far. It took them in overtime to do it, but they pulled out the 86-80 win over Michigan State. Boy, that still kind of boggles my mind, because I remember very clearly the highlights of UCLA growing up. And I was really young, but I mean, I still remember it. And of course, Michigan State is a little more contemporary. Mm-hmm. But having those two teams in the first four, that's staggering to me.
It really is kind of a what gives you an idea of what 2020-2021 was like, because obviously Michigan State was in the play-in game. Kentucky and Duke didn't make it. Carolina was in the 8-9 game. Kansas is probably like more of a, you know, a present-day blue blood, but they had that, you know, they played in their first round game. And But yeah, just not the normal teams we would see, you know, having high seeds.
The only thing that I can say about this tournament so far is it's an implosion. Everything has been upside down all season long. Just when you thought that things were going well, something would come along and throw a monkey wrench into it. And it has been that way right up until, you know, VCU disappeared because of COVID. And all these upsets, if you can call them that, because, you know, really on any given Sunday, as they say, it applies in basketball. It applies in any sport, to be honest with you. But the NCAA tournament, you can always count on upsets. But boy, this year, nothing but. It's been every time you turn around, there's some barn burner game going on that's coming down to the last few seconds. Going into overtime, insane stuff. What are your thoughts on the tournament so far?
Embrace the chaos. that's been my hashtag that I've been using since, like you said, everything's been upside down. When, you know, we saw, like, oh, I mean, we could just, there are numerous upsets we can look at. I remember Abilene Christian, the last game of the first round on Saturday night, beating Texas on two free throws in the final seconds of the game.
Crazy.
Nobody, like, unless you were an Abilene Christian alum or somebody who thought their mascot was cute or something, or you liked their colors, you weren't picking Abilene Christian to beat Texas. Okay, you could. Most people picked Ohio to beat Virginia because of the circumstances for Virginia heading into that game. Okay, I can understand that. North Texas, you know, they upset Purdue. I think there was a path for that. I mean, North Texas had a nice run to win the auto bid, for playing really good defense in that tournament and played good defense against Purdue. And you know, we've heard all season long just about how good the Big Ten has been. And yeah, that's not necessarily been the case in the tournament. And obviously the biggest story of the tournament, Oral Roberts, upset Ohio State, who many people had in the Final Four, myself included, then went out, beat Florida, and is the second 15 seed to ever reach the Sweet 16 since Florida Gulf Coast. What else do we have? Like, so Oregon State upsetting Tennessee in a game that wasn't even that close. And then obviously in the second round, we also had Loyola beating Illinois, who again, many people had in the Final Four, myself included. I had Illinois winning the championship in my bracket. You know, we still have games going on right now, and Michigan, as we are speaking, is, you know, right there with LSU's right with them early in the second half. So yeah, when there comes a point when you're like, you know, when you don't care about your bracket and you just want to see the madness put into March Madness, and that's what I'm here for.
Wow.
But the only certainty to this point of this tournament is Gonzaga whipping six different kinds of booty all over their opponents.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'll stick by my pick of the Zags taking the whole thing. Yeah. Obviously,
you're looking pretty smart right now.
Yeah. That's about the only time. I will just say this. You know, when you say you're looking pretty smart right now, I have to put this asterisk in that comment. It just so happens that Will's wife, Sammy, is leading our bracket challenge. So, yeah, I'm not looking too smart. She's looking exceptionally smart because we know she is. And she's just, I can tell you this, in the past, Patrick, who used to be with ACC Nation, his wife would join in, and she, same way. It was just like we all had to catch up with her. I don't know what this magic is, this pixie dust that women have tossing onto us and blinding us to the reality of who's going to win this tournament.
See, some of us actually like to like put thought into it as to who's going to win these tournaments, and then they use the like mascot thing, and it works. I mean,
I'm going to quit thinking.
What's that?
I'm going to quit thinking.
Just do. Okay.
Just do. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the reality is like you say, you have Gonzaga to win it all, but that's like what you've kind of done with your bracket is you kind of sidestepped all the landmines to this point.
Yeah. Well,
barely. Yeah. Well, you probably hit a couple, but
everything
you're still in good shape.
Is just it looks literally like somebody has just come in there and strafed my bracket, and I'm just, man, wow, all these teams are just being peeled. I mean, in a normal year, typically, as you said, you know, you put some thought into it and do some research and stuff like that, and you come up with a fairly decent track record with your picks. Not this year.
Yeah, this is clearly a visual for the people watching on the video, but I hope hopefully you're now going to watch this on video, but I should just do this to my bracket.
That's right. Oh, man. Yeah. And take the ashes out someplace and scatter them to the winds.
Yeah. The remains, just throw it outside. Wow. It doesn't need a proper burial.
Hmm. At least you didn't set off any smoke alarms or
I saved that for cooking.
Yeah, me too, unfortunately. Let's take a look at the first round action. It was Florida over Virginia Tech, 75-70. And Virginia Tech had a pretty decent showing here in this game. There were some points in this matchup that I actually felt like the Hokies – We're gonna get over the hump, but then, man, Florida just—they were relentless. So
yeah, you know, that game was pretty even throughout. Like no team really pulled away from the other, and it was a pretty, and for being the first game of the tournament, that's kind of what you want. You don't want to see, you know the tournament start with a snoozer. That's generally why you'll see like an 8-9, 7-10 game to start it, because you know it's going to be close. This game lived up to that billing. Your thoughts after Florida was fouled up 3 in the final seconds that they would hit the free throws to pull away, but they didn't. Left the door open for Naheem Aline to hit a 3 to send it to overtime. But in the end, Virginia Tech just couldn't make that one more shot that they needed. Yeah. And, you know, good effort. Cause I admit I picked Florida in this game mostly because I was concerned about all the time off Virginia Tech had and how that would affect their play. Didn't really affect them in this game.
I'm going to hold this up and, in kind of my salute, to the Hokies, having the ACC Coach of the Year and their performance in the getting to the tournament. Congratulations, and I'm sipping from your cup today. And I'll just have you know that I have a selection of goodies from everybody's team here in the house. It just so happens I'm drinking from a Virginia Tech Hokies cup this evening. It's in the cycle. So, anyway, boy, this next game, not exactly what I expected. And the reason here, quite frankly, is if Moses Wright was there, it would have been a completely different ball game. Let me just say this right up front. It would have been a bare knuckle fight down to the wire. And I think Georgia Tech would have won this game, but Loyola Chicago pulled it off 71-60 over Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I think that his absence was a big deal in this game. You know, you're missing the ACC Player of the Year, and those don't grow on trees. You don't have those sitting on your bench normally, that kind of production. It was a lot of, you know, getting a lot out of Jose Alvarado in this game. I mean, he only went seven deep, and usually Josh Pastner will go eight, nine deep, but without him, you know, you're asking a lot out of the rest of your players. And obviously we know Jose Alvarado can live up to the billing, and Jordan Usher played well. He was probably and Michael DeVoe also played really well in this game. It's just, like you said, that one missing piece probably prevented them from winning this game. And, you know, the reality is, you know, COVID is something we still need to take very seriously, even though the numbers have been trending down for some time, thanks to vaccinations, but it's still a big deal. I mean, they're not the only ACC program to have had to have gone through this lately. So, yeah. But, you know, Loyola, and we saw what happened on Saturday. They are a team that a lot of people thought could, if they were able to get by Georgia Tech, could give an Illinois game. And did they ever?
That must have been a real sweet victory for them. Our next game, disappointing performance down the stretch. North Carolina falling to Wisconsin in a big way. And I'll tell you, Wisconsin is a beast. They run teams up and down the court unlike most teams can. 85-62, the final score there. And it's already had an impact, I think, to a degree on the Tar Heels and the transfer portal.
Well, in the case of Brad Davison, he'll trip you up and down the court or nut punch you, depending on what he feels like at the moment. But the story of the game was exactly the same issue that plagued North Carolina all season, and that's just shooting. They shot they shot at 35% from the field in this game. 38% from the field in this game. They just couldn't get going. They only had 12 offensive rebounds, were actually out rebounded by the Badgers in this game. And like I said, the big issue, just not getting the consistent outside shooting, plagued them all season long. And just the glutton of people that they had up at the front court, you know, has been Roy Williams trying to juggle that front court to get people good minutes, and it just didn't work out, as we found out on Monday with Walker Kessler announcing he was going to enter the transfer portal. And from the sounds of it, he will not be the last. We should expect a few more names, and it's going to be a very interesting offseason in Chapel Hill, because that team does need a bit of a retooling.
Yeah. And they're not the only team. I think that now we're going to focus. We're focusing obviously on the Tar Heels at the moment, but just say that this season has been disruptive in so many ways to people on a personal level, professional level. Just everything has just been upsetting. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can go back to football season and how players decided, you know, I want to be closer to home. And a lot of things, you know, I think some thinking about life, what things mean to them, et cetera, and what they want to get out of life and what they want to get out of their sports experience. You're right. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to take the transfer portal. And I think there's going to be a big shakeup overall in sports probably the next month or so. And it should be expected. And I don't think anybody can look at these players and say, hey, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Why are you being, you know, so selfish?
Yeah. So what I've been doing ever since I just started doing this as of Monday, like I printed out every ACC team's rosters. And again, this is another thing for video. So again, look at the video. What I'm holding here is the Boston College roster, trying to, so you don't see the Twin Cities in the backdrop. But this is, I took off all the seniors from the roster because I don't expect any of them to return. And that's just eight players as of right now that are going to come back. And some of those could be walk-ons. So you look at a situation like Boston College, there's going to be a lot of turnover in that program. And obviously a new coach will have something to do with that. Then we're looking at teams like, right now there are teams like a Georgia Tech hasn't lost anybody to the transfer portal yet. I mean, we're waiting to see. I mean, obviously their season just ended a few days ago, so we got to let it all breathe a little bit. There could be more transfers, especially like from the Commonwealth school. I take that back. Joe Bamisil announced he was entering the transfer portal from Virginia Tech. So every team is going to have somebody transferring. That's just the reality of what this offseason is going to bring.
That may be a good thing. Let's look at it from that perspective. Let's just think that, this is a good thing for, I think, the players. I think it'll shake up the programs a little bit. It'll be a fresh start for everybody involved. And I think that's exactly what a lot of people need. They need a fresh start. I'll be frank with you, Will. After this year, just how it's impacted everything in everybody's life, I think, I would more than welcome a reboot of life in general, because I am so ready to get back out and just live again. Got my first shot the other day, and my wife got hers today. So we are moving in that direction. I know that I believe your wife is getting hers, and it's
got her first one on Friday. So
good.
The second one in early April here.
It's a progression. We'll all get there eventually. The next game up was, I don't think that anybody who understood how Rutgers' season has been so far was too surprised about this win. I know Clemson fans were disappointed in how it ended up, but Rutgers coming out with a 60-56 win over Clemson, not too surprising in the big picture.
Right. And I thought this game would be close. I mean, obviously it was a 7-10 game, but I thought it was going to be pretty close. Clemson is a very inconsistent shooting team, and Rutgers can be that way too at times. They have better shooters. But I even having said that, I feel like Amir Sims is the best player on the court for either team. But again, it goes back to that shooting, and Clemson just went through too many of those shooting lulls throughout the game, and Rutgers getting contributions from guys like Geo Baker and Ron Harper Jr., who makes you feel old when you realize a guy who's won so many NBA championships and was playing not all that long ago has a kid in college. But still a great season for Clemson, who overachieved compared to what a lot of people expected out of them. Brad Brunell came into the season probably on the hot seat in a lot of people's minds, and he's more than likely locked himself up for a little bit longer if the administration desires to do so. Next year, that team is going to need some work. Just because I would imagine Amir Sims is going to be gone, but they just don't have a lot of shooting outside of that. Right. That's something, and this is where the transfer portal will come in, because if you want to improve right away, you're going to need some of these players, especially who may come from a lower level school, who are walking buckets basically, that could come in and give you that offensive boost that you need.
I think that Brunell is going to be around for probably quite a few years, to be frank about it. I think that Clemson's focus there, I mean, they've got a good coach. Their program has been building. So why change a good thing?
Right. I mean, and then they did lose somebody to the transfer portal too. Johnny Newman. Johnny Newman. Yeah, he entered the transfer portal for Clemson. So that's one player gone from this team. Yeah. So that's, and I say, Brunell's going to have to retool a little bit.
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure he will. I wanted to say this next school that lost to Syracuse was South Dakota State, because that's who lost to the women, but it was San Diego State. Syracuse over San Diego State, 78-62. Again, I'm eating crow when it comes down to Syracuse, so I'm not going to say anything negative about them, which probably means they'll lose now. I've watched their games, and that zone screws with people because they're just not used to it. But they're going to run up against a team that understands the zone, and I think that's going to be it. Because they've got a couple of really good shooters. Buddy has been lights out, but how long is that going to last? There's two other players on that team who can pop threes when given the opportunity. But again, as you always talk about when teams are, you know, it's like in football, if you've got a lot of turnovers one season, well, next season don't bank on it, right? It's a return to the mean. So at some point here, where is that deep well of threes going to run dry?
Yeah, we're looking for that regression in the mean with Buddy Boeheim, and obviously we haven't hit it yet, but the reality is it's going to happen at some point. Maybe this week, because they're going to have a tough test. I mean, Houston is a team that can hit shots from the outside, and they can defend, and you know, they have the type of people that can exploit that zone. But as we've seen through these first two rounds, all of a sudden the Syracuse team is like on steroids compared to what they were in the regular season. And they like this, and I think what you mentioned has to do with it. People see this 2-3 zone and they panic and they don't know what to do against it. I mean, it's the concept of beating it is simple, but the execution it's easier said than done, because you need to have good perimeter shooters and you have to have a big on the inside, or, you know, someone who can be athletic, mm-hmm. that can go up and drive to the lane and get the bucket that way. I don't think, you know, San Diego State was obviously they don't have the athletes or the shooting to do that. And obviously Buddy Boeheim shooting unconscious like he is. I mean, San Diego State stood no chance in that game.
Yeah, not at all. The next game up was much closer than it should have been, but there was a promise here. We've talked about the athleticism of Florida State all season. One of the things that we haven't talked about is execution and synchronicity. And in this game, I started to see it. I started to see them playing as a team. And even though the score was close, Florida State 64, UNC Greensboro 54, I saw a team that was clicking. And I think they're clicking at the right time. They were making some, you were talking about Buddy being unconscious in his shooting. These folks were making some unconscious passes and plays on offense that were staggering. And, man, there was just such a nice rhythm going on there that it was very impressive. Now, they're going to run into a wall. Mm-hmm. It's coming. Now, whether or not that athleticism and that synchronicity can continue and win a game when it really, really counts the most. Mm-hmm. That's the question.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing of it is they were 0-9 from three in that game against Greensboro, but they were just so good inside. I mean, they were 25 of 39 from two. So that gives you kind of an idea just how good they were around the basket. Mm-hmm. They still turned it over 15 times. That's not very good, but they, for the most of that game, they actually were pretty good handling the ball, especially in the first half. I think they got a little bit sloppy in the second half, and that's what allowed Greensboro to get back into this game. And anybody who watches you know, Southern Conference basketball or follows that program knows Wes Miller is a damn good coach and should be getting a much better job than he has right now. But just he I don't know why he hasn't got it. Maybe he's just being a little picky and choosy, and hey, good on him for it. He can do that. He can continue to make Greensboro a perennial tournament team and, you know, bide his time, because he obviously can stay there as long as he likes. But yeah, a good win for Florida State, and one of the rare ones for this conference, as we've seen throughout this tournament.
I'm not going to denigrate Wes Miller at all, because I agree. I think he's certainly demonstrated his ability to take a team and do something with him. But I will say something about the Southern Conference, because I've got a lot of experience with the conference. There have been a lot of great coaches in and out of the Southern Conference who have really shined. And you would ask yourself, why haven't these people gone someplace to that next level? And the problem is there's so many coaches that you ask that of that are in a conference such as the Southern Conference or some other smaller conference of that nature. And, you know, you can shine in a conference like the Southern Conference and draw the attention of a lot of people, but are you capable of doing the same thing, taking that same bubble that you've created and moving it over to, let's say, an ACC team? Now, that's where the question comes into play. Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason why I think sometimes, you know, there are coaches who are smart enough, and I'm not going to say Wes Miller is one of these guys. I'm not going to say that, because I'm impressed by what he does. So, like I said, I'm not going to denigrate him. I'm just saying that there are a lot of coaches out there who understand their abilities are, you know, limited within a certain context, right? And
right.
So they understand that they're going to shine in this sort of situation. So it's sort of like being a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah. And here's the thing. He's still only 38 years old. I mean, he just turned 38 in January. Yeah. He's still really young in the coaching.
That's right.
Coaching years. Cause you know, a lot of players, if they play professionally, would be wrapping up their career right about now if they were good enough to play for a long time. But he's been the coach there for several years and has just been good at it. And he and like I said, he's given his youth still, he can take his time there and, you know, do and wait till he's ready to get a bigger job. I feel like at this point, he's probably going to go back to Greensboro next year. But let's say one of the school in that area has an opening. I'm not saying necessarily ACC school,
sure,
but
sure.
A job, you know, and from a conference that has a school in the Carolinas,
right.
They would be foolish to not reach out to him.
That's right. Yeah, he is stepping, you know, he's using that as a stepping stone. And that's what I would suggest he continue to do. Because at 38, he is still pretty young. Most coaches, most guys who get those jobs, the head coach jobs, it's like in your 40s, usually.
Yeah.
So, and that's number, that's, let's be realistic here. There's nothing about ageism here. I mean, you can look at it on both ends of the stick here. It's just experience and understanding systems and getting contacts for recruiting, et cetera. Those are important factors. Let's get into this next game.
Yeah, and yeah, I was going to say, if you're good enough, you can, no matter how old you are, and this is true with North Carolina football. I mean, how old, Mac Brown's in his 60s and got another job, you know, coaching North Carolina and has brought them success they hadn't seen in quite some time. I mean, you look at, I mean, the situation and just to kind of go off the ACC for a second here, Minnesota's new head coach Ben Johnson is 40 years old, so he's still really young, and this is obviously his first head coaching job. But you know, it feels like they're trending a little younger with some of these big time coaches.
Well, let's get into this next one, which was a painful one. to watch. And I have some comments about this game and a couple other games that I've watched. Let me before we get into this, let me just say this. Let me sidetrack completely here for just a moment. This whole thing with the weight room difference for men and women, the NCAA, what the hell? I mean, this is the institution that's supposed to make sure that all of this is followed correctly, and this is the kind of crap you guys pull. I mean, there's really no excuse for that. Somebody needs more than just a smack on the hand for that foolish move. That's such a PR nightmare. Second thing, watching games, I mean, and it's difficult sometimes when you're broadcasting from home or whatever. I mean, you understand this. You do hot mic and you do it from home. Mm-hmm. It's difficult to get that same feel and to mm-hmm. sometimes to do a game justice.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I haven't been impressed at all with the performance of maybe 50% of the people who are announcing. Mm-hmm. And third, the reffing in these games, there has been stuff that's been right in front of the face of refs, and they have not called it. And I'm shocked at how bad the reffing has been in this tournament so far. It hasn't been, I'd say about 20% of the games, or 20% of the game overall has been pretty poorly called.
Let me go back to the play-by-play thing, because we should give a shout out to Lisa Byington. She's the first woman to call NCAA men's tournament basketball games. She has killed it with the calls of the Abilene Christian Texas game and the Oral Roberts Florida game. She absolutely killed it. So great, great job on her behalf.
Agreed.
As far as the officiating, you know, keep in mind too, some of the best ones that were in there in the tournament, you know, were supposed to ref the tournament, got booted because of, you know, they had issue, you know, that one incident where they were out at a restaurant. Obviously Roger Ayers caught COVID and he's been having a hard time dealing with it. So, and then some of the other guys, you know, were in the quarantine because they were close contact, so they had to deal with that. So some of the best of the business, you know, that would have probably been here are out. And but yeah, still no excuse for the officiating. Some of it has been pretty bad.
No, it's and see, now you know me well enough. Typically, I don't call out refs on stuff. I've got a lot of respect for reffing. It is not easy to do. But there was a couple of plays in particular that I saw in another game that was so obvious. It was an illegal offense, and it was just blatantly going on, play after play after play, or series after series, and it was like, this stuff is going on right in front of your faces, guys, and you're not calling this. Well, apparently the opposing coach in this particular game had a conversation with one of the refs or several of them and brought it to their attention, because that was one of the first things they called in the second half. So, you know, and that's part of the process. That's the way it works. You know, refs and coaches need to interact, and that's the way it works. But golly, man, I don't know. I expect better. And, you know, you point out the fact that some of them were not available, some of the best and the people that we've come to, you know, trust and feel like they do a good job. Mm-hmm. I would just say this, that if you're working your way up the ladder, hoping to become a ref at the NCAA level, bone up on your game. Mm-hmm. Don't come in there half-cocked, unfocused. Get into the game. Don't be distracted. do your best. And you got to, you know, most of these folks, these men and women, they start off doing rec league and work their way up to high school, middle school, high school, then smaller college. And then if they're lucky, they get up to the bigs from there. And so I appreciate all that effort and time you put in, because you don't get paid diddly squat. You do it out of pure love of the game. It's the fun of it. But, you know, please do better. Golly. All right, let's get back into the games, because, man, that's the kind of stuff that really takes away from the fun of watching. This next game, big upset of sorts, but then again, kind of expected too. Ohio with a big win, 62-58 over Virginia. Virginia came back and, you know, with seconds to play, this is where you see good coaching come into play. Tony Bennett is just, I continue to be amazed by him. He worked those tenths of a second to his advantage in ways that you don't normally see any longer. And he got it pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this game was, I think it was kind of an easy call to pick the upset just because of everything that was going against Virginia. I mean, they were not able to practice for 8 days, right? Because they last played Thursday. Then they arrived in Indy on Friday, had the COVID test twice, including one at like 1 a.m, Saturday morning. Then they practice Saturday morning in order to play Saturday night. So they literally could not really prep for Ohio in the way you would normally prep for a team. And you could tell that the shooting in that game was affected by the pause, because they didn't have their shooting strokes, their legs under them in the right way, in the way you would normally expect. Mm-hmm. It was just, it was an unfortunate situation, but this is the reality of the NCAA tournament. And this season is COVID is a real factor. And obviously Justin McCoy, we found was the one who tested positive, and he had been a big factor for Virginia recently in terms of providing energy off the bench. And without him, it just really hindered the way that, you know, some of the things that they wanted to do. And no disrespect to Ohio, because Jason Preston is a really good player who will likely play in the NBA here very soon. And it's an interesting situation, because you look at Virginia and the way they've, you know, had their NCAA tournament runs. You know, obviously 2018, we don't need to rehash that, then turn around and win the national championship in 2019 and a first round loss this year. Plus, remember, they were up like 15 in the second half against Syracuse in the Elite Eight and lost there. They've had some pretty rough outings in the NCAA tournament, but would you take the success of this team, you know, over, you know, given everything? Absolutely, you would. It really irritates me to see people saying some of the things they're saying about Tony Bennett and the way things, you know, played out. But I think one of the things that hindered them was they just didn't have any outside shooting. I mean, their best shooters were, you know, the starting center who's 7-1 and the you know, their 6-8 and 6-9 forwards. If they wanted to play on the inside and, you know, try to kick it out, you're asking, you know, K.A. Clark, who might be like 30-something, like low 30s from three, Reese Beekman, who's in the 20s. You know, Casey Morsell when he came off the bench was, you know, not very good either, but he actually played fairly well in that Ohio game. And I think not having a guard who could hit from the outside and kind of create, I think that was more of Virginia's issue than anything, especially at the end of the season.
Interesting, interesting game. And as you point out, I think that people anticipating more or different out of the Cavaliers. You need to, you know, inspect your thought pattern there. That goes for all these teams that have that didn't win. It's one of those things. It's tournament time, and it's sometimes stuff happens.
And think of it is, and this is another video visual for those of you watching on video, and they always say, talking about, oh, there was so many fluky things that happened on the way to winning a title. But guess what? They still won the title. I got the piece of court to prove it.
Yeah, you know, you pointed out something, and I was watching a conversation about the NFL, and it was talking about the Philadelphia Eagles. Mm-hmm. And it was three guys talking about it. I've never seen them before, and they did a great job, and I was kind of entranced by the conversation. And they were talking about the fact that, you know, if you're the fan of a team, what would you rather do? Have a Super Bowl win and then have like 4 or 5 years of down? Or would you just like to suffer continuously? It's just one of these things that we're analyzing, how fans react to stuff. And if you look at the Virginia program, and I can look at Duke and I can look at North Carolina the same way. You know, when you have a down year or something, you know, you don't go talking about, oh, it's time to replace the coach.
Yeah. And then you look at, I've seen this been brought up about Tom Izzo and some of his stuff, lately in the NCAA tournament. I mean, this year he had to make the first four just to even get in and lost. I mean, he did make the final four 2 years ago, the year Virginia won the national championship. But don't forget, back in 2016, he lost as a 2 seed to a 15 seed, Middle Tennessee. So it's not like he's escaped, he's escaped everything. He's right. Had his fair share of tournament failures lately as well.
Well, look over at Kentucky and Cal. Everybody has down years, and it happens. And gosh, with all the extra nonsense going on with COVID, we'll get back to some sense of normalcy, and teams will rebuild, and players will get it together, and coaches will get it together. And,
I keep talking about it. This is a year more than ever that the transfer portal is going to be a huge thing. I'm speaking of Virginia. I think they already know about those issues, and they're already reaching out to some people who have already entered the transfer portal that would be great fits for the program. I think this is going to be a really retooled Virginia team next year who, and like I said, they need shooting from the backcourt, and I hope they can land like a shooting guard who can hit from the outside, because that's going to make a real difference with this team next year, especially if, depending on what happens with Trey Murphy, because there's rumblings he could enter the NBA.
Yeah, I think it'd be a little early for him to do that. I like Trey, but I don't think he's ready. But that's me. I think he'll probably test the waters like anybody smart.
I think it would be smart for him to at least test the waters, leave the option to come back to school. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You get feedback saying this is what you need to work on. Oh, right. Okay. Now I'll go back to school for one more year.
That's right. That's right. It's a good run. And I tell you what, next year, if he comes back and plays next year, which I anticipate that he will, that's when you typically are going to see somebody like that shine. He'll really rise to the occasion. Our last score, and we've got games going on while we talk. There will be games, next couple of days, obviously going into the weekend, but, Syracuse pulled off a really big win. As I mentioned earlier, they were an 11 seed beating number three seed, West Virginia. Huggy Bear getting, I think what was his 900th win before that, something like that. Bob Huggins, and a good solid coach. He's doing his thing at West Virginia. Syracuse came in 75-72, final score there. Again, here's a situation where that zone is just it. Players are just not mentally prepared for that because they don't see it.
Yeah, and Syracuse, the way the first half was going, it looked like it was going to be a repeat of the San Diego State game because they got out quite big in this game. They were up double digits, and West Virginia clawed their way back in. And I think I can't remember if they took the lead at one point, but then Syracuse got it back, or I don't remember exactly. But this ended up being a real close game, and because Syracuse or West Virginia just had a lot of great outside shooters, they weren't able to complete the comeback. And obviously Buddy Boeheim is doing his bit again, hitting just about everything he shot, and he's that's pretty much single-handedly the reason they're moving on to the Sweet 16 right now.
Want more ACC sports news and interviews? Make accnation.net your homepage or follow us on Google News. Be sure to subscribe to ACC Nation on your favorite podcast or streaming radio platform. While you're there, we'd appreciate a rating and your support through PayPal. Follow us on social media at ACC Nation. And you'll find Will on Twitter at WillsWorldMN, and I'm at ACCTheQ. Until next time, cheers.
Score.